Chapter 19. Vows. Uneasy, Loyal watched Nynaeve glide off down the lamp-lit corridor in one direction and Varen in the other. Neither was much taller than his waist, but they were Aes Sedai. The fact knotted his tongue sufficiently that by the time he had worked up his nerve to ask one of them to accompany him, both were out of sight around sharp corners. The manor house was a rambling place, added to over many years with no real overall plan that he could discern, and hallways frequently met at odd angles. He really wished he had an Aes Sedai for company when he faced his mother. Even Cadswain, although she made him very nervous with how she was always pinching at Rand. Sooner or later, Rand was going to explode. He was not the same man Loyal first met in Camelon, or even the man he had left in Cairhien. The mood around Rand was dark and stony now, a dense patch of lion's claw and treacherous ground underfoot. The whole house felt that way with Rand in it. A lean, gray-haired serving woman carrying a basket of folded towels gave a start, then shook her head and muttered something under her breath before offering him a brief curtsy and walking on. She made a small sidestep as though she was moving around something, or someone. He stared at the spot and scratched behind his ear. Maybe he could only see Ogier dead. Not that he really wanted to. It was sad enough just knowing that human dead could no longer rest. Having the same confirmed for Ogier would be enough to break his heart. Most likely they would appear only inside Steading, in any case. He would very much like to see a town vanish, though. Not a real town, but a town that was as dead as those spirits the humans claimed to see. You might be able to walk its streets before it melted and see what people were like before the War of the Hundred Years, or even the Trolloc Wars. So Varen said, and she seemed to know a very great deal about it. That would certainly be worth a mention in his book. It was going to be a fine book. Scratching his beard with two fingers, the thing itched. He sighed. It would have been a fine book. Standing there in the corridor was only putting off the inevitable. Put off clearing the brush and you always find chokevine in it, so the old saying went. Only he felt as though the chokevine was tight around him instead of a tree. Breathing hard, he followed the serving woman all the way to the wide stairs that led up to the Ogier rooms. The staircase had two sturdy banisters, shoulder high on the gray-haired woman, and stout enough to give a decent handhold. He was often afraid just to brush against stair rails made for humans for fear he might break them. One ran down the middle, with the steps along the wood-paneled hall pitched for human feet, those on the outside for Ogier. The woman was old, as humans counted years, yet she climbed more quickly than he and was scurrying down the corridor by the time he reached the top. Doubtless she was taking the towels to his mother's room and to Elder Hammond's and Aerith's. Surely they would prefer to get dry before talking. He would suggest that. It would gain him time to think. His thoughts seemed as sluggish as his feet, and his feet felt like millstones. There were six bedrooms built for Ogier along the corridor, which itself was properly scaled for them. His upstretched hands would have come a pace short of touching the ceiling beams, along with a storeroom, a bathing room with a large copper tub, and the sitting room. This was the oldest part of the house, dating back nearly 500 years. A lifetime for a very old Ogier, but many lifetimes for humans. They lived such brief lives, except for Aes Sedai. That had to be why they flitted about like hummingbirds. But even Aes Sedai could be nearly as precipitous as the rest. That was a puzzlement. The sitting room door was carved with a great tree, not Ogier work, yet finely detailed and instantly recognizable. He stopped, tugging his coat straight, combing his hair with his fingers, wishing he had time to black his boots. There was an ink stain on his cuff. No time to do anything about that, either. Cadswain was right, his mother was not a woman to be kept waiting. Strange that Cadswain knew of her. Perhaps knew her by the way she had spoken. Kovril, daughter of Ella, daughter of Sung, was a famous speaker, but he had not realized she was known outside. Light, he was all but panting with anxiety. Trying to control his breathing, he went in. Even here the hinges creaked. The servants had been aghast when he asked after some oil to put on them. That was their task. He was a guest. But they still had not gotten around to it themselves. The high-ceilinged room was quite spacious, with dark polished wallpapers and vine-carved chairs and small vine-carved tables and wrought-iron stand lamps of a proper size, their mirrored flames dancing above his head. Except for a shelf of books, all old enough that the leather bindings were flaking and all of which he had read before, only a small bowl of sung wood was Ogier made. A nice piece. He wished he knew who had sung it. But it was aged enough that singing to it had failed to raise so much as an echo. Yet everything had been made by someone who at least had been to a steading. The pieces would have looked at home in any dwelling. Of course, the room looked nothing like a room in a steading, but Lord Elgaron's ancestor had made an effort to have his visitors feel comfortable. His mother was standing in front of one of the brick fireplaces, a strong-faced woman, with her vine-embroidered skirts spread to let the flames dry them. He heaved a sigh of relief at seeing she was not as wet as he had expected, although it put paid to suggesting that they take the time to get dry. Their rain cloaks must have developed leaks. They did that after a time, as the aniseed oil wore off. Maybe her temper would not be as bad as he feared either. White-haired Elder Hammond, his flaring coat dark with damp in several large patches, was examining one of the axes from the wall, shaking his head over it. Its haft was as long as he was tall. Made during the Trolloc Wars, or even before, there were a pair of those, the long axe heads inlaid with gold and silver, and a pair of ornate pointed pruning knives, with long shafts as well. Of course, pruning knives, sharp on one side and saw-toothed on the other, always had long handles, but the inlays and long red tassels indicated that these had been made for weapons, too. Not the most felicitous choices for hanging in a room meant for reading or conversation or the quiet contemplation of stillness. But Loyal's eyes swept past his mother and Elder Hammond to the other fireplace where Aerith was drying her own skirts, short and almost fragile appearing. Her mouth was straight, her nose short and well-rounded, her eyes the exact color of a silver bell's ripe seed pod. In short, she was beautiful. And her ears, sticking up through the glossy black hair that hung down her back, curving and plump, tipped with fine tufts that looked as soft as dandelion down, they were the most gorgeous ears he had ever seen. Not that he would be crude enough to say so. She smiled at him, a very mysterious smile, and his own ears quivered with embarrassment. Surely she could not know what he had been thinking. Could she? Rand said women could sometimes, but that was human women.
"So here you are,"
his mother said, planting her fists on her hips. There were no smiles from her. Her brows were drawn down, her jaw set. If this was her better temper, she might as well have been drenched.
"I must say you've led me a merry chase, but I have you in hand now, and I do not mean to let you run. What is that on your lip? And your chin? Well, you can shave those right off again. Don't you grimace at me, son Loyal."
Fingering the growth on his upper lip uneasily, he tried to smooth his face. When your mother named you son, she was in no mood to trifle with. But it was hard. He wanted his beard and mustaches. Some might think it pretentious, as young as he was, but just the same.
"A merry chase, indeed,"
Elder Hammond said dryly, hanging the axe back on its hooks. He had long white mustaches that fell past his chin, and a long narrow beard that hung to his chest. True, he was well above 300 years old, but it still seemed unfair.
"A very merry chase. First we walked to Cairhien, having heard you were there, only you had gone. After a stop at Steading Tsofu, we walked to Camelon, where young Althor informed us you were in the Two Rivers and took us there. But you were gone again. To Camelon, it seemed."
His eyebrows rose almost to his hairline.
"I began to think we were playing Ring in the Dell."
"The people in Emmons Field told us how heroic you were,"
Aerith said, her high voice like music. Clutching her skirts with both hands, ears fluttering with excitement, she seemed about to bounce up and down.
They told us all about you fighting Trollocs and Murdrol, and going out among them by yourself to seal the Manetharan Waygate so no more could come.
I wasn't by myself,
Loyal protested, waving his hands. He thought his ears might fly from his head, they were twitching so with embarrassment.
Gaul was with me. We did it together. I'd never have reached the Waygate without Gaul.
She wrinkled her delicate nose at him, dismissing Gaul's participation. His mother sniffed. Her ears were rigid with distaste.
Foolishness! Fighting in battles? Putting yourself in danger? Gambling? All of it! Pure foolishness, and there'll be no more of it!
Elder Hammond harumphed, ears twitching irritably, and folded his hands behind his back. He disliked being interrupted.
So we returned to Camelin to find you gone, and then to Kyrian once more to find you gone yet again. And you put yourself in danger again in Kyrian,
Loyal's mother broke in, shaking a finger at him.
Have you no sense at all?
The Aiel said you were very brave at Dumai's Wells,
Aerith murmured, looking at him through her long eyelashes. He swallowed hard. Her gaze made his throat feel tight. He knew he should look away, but how could he be demure when she was looking at him?
In Kyrian, your mother decided she couldn't stay away from the Great Stump any longer, though why I cannot say, since they aren't likely to reach any sort of decision for another year or two, so we set out to return to Steading Shangtai in the hope we could find you later.
Elder Hammond said all of that very fast, glaring at the two women as if he thought they might break in on him again. His beard and mustaches seemed to bristle. Loyal's mother gave another sniff, sharper.
I expect to bring a decision very quickly, in a month or two, or I'd never have given over the search for Loyal, even temporarily. Now that I've found him, we can finish matters and be on our way without any more delay.
She took in Elder Hammond, who was frowning, his ears slanted back, and amended her tone. He was an elder, after all.
Forgive me, Elder Hammond. I meant to say, if it pleases you, will you perform the ceremony? I believe that it does please me, Kovril,
he said mildly, much too mildly. When Loyal heard that tone from his teacher, with ears back, he had always known that he had put a foot very badly wrong. Elder Hammond had been known to throw a piece of chalk at a pupil when he used that tone.
Since I abandoned my students, not to mention speaking to the Great Stump to follow you on this wild chase for that very reason, I believe it does please me indeed. Aerith, you are very young. She's past 80, old enough to marry,
Loyal's mother said sharply, folding her arms across her chest. Her ears twitched with impatience.
Her mother and I reached agreement. You yourself witnessed us signing the betrothal and Loyal's dowry.
Elder Hammond's ears tilted back a little further, and his shoulders hunched as if he was gripping his hands together very hard behind his back. His eyes never left Aerith.
I know you want to marry Loyal, but are you sure you are ready? Taking a husband is a grave responsibility.
Loyal wished someone would ask him that question, but that was not the way. His mother and Aerith had reached their agreement, and only Aerith could stop it now. If she wanted to. Did he want her to? He could not stop thinking of his book. He could not stop thinking of Aerith. She certainly looked grave.
My weaving sells well, and I am ready to buy another loom and take an apprentice. But that may not be what you mean. I am ready to tend a husband.
Suddenly she grinned, a lovely grin that divided her face in two.
Especially one with such beautiful long eyebrows.
Loyal's ears quivered, and so did Elder Hammond's, if not so much. Women were very free in their talk among themselves, so he had heard, but usually they tried not to embarrass men with it. Usually. His mother's ears actually trembled with amusement. The older man cleared his throat.
This is serious, Aerith. Come now. If you are sure, take his hands.
Without hesitation, she came to stand in front of Loyal, smiling up at him as she took his hands in hers. Her small hands felt very warm. His felt numb and cold. He swallowed. It really was going to happen.
Aerith, daughter of Iva, daughter of Aelar,
Elder Hammond said, holding one hand palm down over each of their heads.
Will you take Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Halen, as husband, and vow under the light and by the tree to treasure, esteem, and love him so long as he lives, to care for him and tend him, and to guide his feet on the path they should follow?
Under the light and by the tree, I so vow.
Aerith's voice was firm and clear, and her smile seemed to have grown wider than her face.
Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Halen, will you accept Aerith, daughter of Iva, daughter of Aelar, as wife, and vow under the light and by the tree to treasure, esteem, and love her so long as she lives, to care for her, and to heed her guidance?
Loyal took a deep breath. His ears trembled. He wanted to marry her, he did, just not yet.
"Under the light and by the tree I so vow,"
he said hoarsely.
"Then under the light and by the tree I declare you wed. May the blessings of the light and the tree be upon you always."
Loyal looked down at his wife. His wife. She raised a hand and stroked slender fingers along his mustaches. The beginnings of mustaches, anyway.
You are very handsome, and I think mustaches will be beautiful on you. A beard, too.
Nonsense,
his mother said. Surprisingly, she was dabbing at her eyes with a small lace handkerchief. She was never emotional.
He's much too young for that sort of thing.
For a moment, he thought Aerith's ears began to slant back. That had to be his imagination. He had had a number of long talks with her. She was a wonderful conversationalist, though come to think, for the most part, she listened. But what little she did say was always very cogent, and he was sure she possessed no sort of temper at all. He had no time to think on it in any event. Resting her hands on his arms, she rose on tiptoes, and he bent to rub his nose against hers. In truth, they nosed for longer than they should have, with Elder Hammond and his mother present, but others faded from his thoughts as he inhaled his wife's scent and she his. And the feel of her nose on his. Pure bliss. He cupped the back of her head and barely had the presence of mind not to finger her ear. She tugged the tuft on one of his. After a while, a very long while it seemed, voices intruded.
"It is still raining, Kovril. You cannot seriously be suggesting we set out again when we have a sound roof over our heads and proper beds to sleep in for a change. No, I say, no. I will not sleep on the ground tonight, or in a barn, or worst of all, in a house where my feet and knees hang over the end of the largest bed available." There have been times I've seriously thought of refusing hospitality, and to the pit with rudeness.
If you insist,
his mother said grudgingly.
But I want an early start come morning. I refuse to waste an hour more than I must. The Book of Translation must be opened as soon as possible.
Loyal jerked erect, aghast.
That's what the great stump is discussing? They can't do that. Not now. We must leave this world eventually so we can come to it when the wheel turns,
his mother said, striding to the nearest fireplace to spread her skirts again.
That is written. Now is exactly the right time, and the sooner the better. Is that what you think, Elder Hammond?
Loyal asked worriedly.
No, my boy, not at all.
Before we left, I gave a speech of 3 hours that I think swayed a few minds in the right direction."
Elder Hammond picked up a tall yellow pitcher and filled a blue cup, but rather than drink, he frowned into the tea.
"Your mother has swayed more, I fear. She may even get her decision in months, as she says."
Aerith filled a cup for his mother, then two more, bringing one to him. His ears quivered with embarrassment yet again. He should have done that. He had a great deal to learn about being a husband, but he knew that much.
"I wish I could address the stomp," he said bitterly. "You sound eager, husband."
Husband? That meant Aerith was very serious. It was almost as bad as being called son loyal.
"What would you say to the stump?"
"I won't have him embarrassed, Aerith,"
his mother said before he could open his mouth.
"Loyal writes well, and Elder Hammond says he may have the makings of a scholar about him, but he gets tongue-tied before even 100. Besides, he's only a boy."
Elder Hammond had said that? Loyal wondered when his ears would stop quivering.
"Any married man may address the stump," Aerith said firmly.
There was no doubt this time. Her ears definitely slanted back.
"Will you allow me to tend my own husband, Mother Coverill?"
His mother's mouth moved, but no sound came out, and her eyebrows were halfway up her forehead. He did not think he had ever seen her so taken aback, though she must have expected this. A wife always took precedence with her husband over his mother.
"Well, husband, what would you say?"
He was not eager, he was desperate. He took a long swallow of the spice-scented tea, but his mouth felt just as dry afterward. His mother was right. The more people were listening, the more he tended to forget what he intended to say and go off on tangents. In truth, he had to admit that sometimes he rambled a bit with only a few listeners. Just a bit, now and then. He knew the forms. A child of 50 knew the forms. Yet he could not make the words come. The few listening to him now were not just any few. His mother was a famous speaker, Elder Hammond a noted one, not to mention being an elder. And there was Aerith. A man wanted to stand well in his wife's eyes. Turning his back on them, he strode to the nearest window and stood rolling the teacup between his palms. The window was sized decently, though the panes set in the carved casement were no larger than those in the rooms below. The rain had dwindled to a drizzle falling from a gray sky, and despite bubbles in the glass, he could make out the trees beyond the fields, pine and sour gum, and the occasional oak, all full of new growth. Algarin's people tended their forest well, clearing out the deadfall to rob wildfire of its tinder. Fire had to be used carefully. The words came more easily now that he could not see the others watching him. Should he begin with the longing? Could they dare leave if they would begin dying in a handful of years? No, that question would have been addressed first thing and suitable answers found, else the stump would have finished inside a year. Light, if he did not address the stump... For a moment he saw the crowds standing all around him, hundreds and hundreds of men and women waiting to hear his words, perhaps several thousand. His tongue tried to cling to the roof of his mouth. He blinked, and there was only the bubbled glass before him and the trees. He had to do it. He was not particularly brave, whatever Aerith thought, but he had learned about bravery watching humans, watching them hang on no matter how strong the winds grew, fight when they had no hope, fight and win because they fought with desperate courage. Suddenly he knew what to say.
"In the War of the Shadow, we did not huddle in our steading, hoping no Trollocs or Murdrawl would be driven to enter. We did not open the Book of Translation and flee. We marched alongside the humans and fought the Shadow. In the Trolloc Wars, we neither hid in the steading nor opened the Book of Translation. We marched with the humans and fought the Shadow. In the darkest years, when hope seemed gone, we fought the Shadow. And by the War of the Hundred Years we had learned not to get ourselves tangled in human affairs,
his mother put in. That was allowed. Speaking could turn into a debate unless the pure beauty of your words held the listeners. She had once spoken from sunrise to sunset in favor of a very unpopular position without a single interruption, and the next day no one had risen to speak against her. He could not form beautiful sentences. He could only say what he believed. He did not turn from the window.
The War of the Hundred Years was a human affair, and none of ours. The Shadow is our affair. When it is the Shadow that must be fought, our axes have always grown long handles. Perhaps in a year, or 5 or 10, we will open the Book of Translation. But if we do it now, we cannot run away with any real hope of safety. Tommen Gaiden is coming, and on that hangs the fate not only of this world, but of any world we might flee to. When fire threatens the trees, we do not run away and hope that the flames will not follow us. We fight. Now the Shadow is coming like wildfire, and we dare not run from it.
Something was moving among the trees. All along the line he could see. A herd of cattle? A very big herd, if so.
That isn't bad, his mother said.
Much too plain-spoken to carry any weight at a steading stump, much less the great stump, of course, but not bad. Go on.
Trollocs,
he breathed. That was what it was. Thousands of trollocs in black spiked mail spilling out of the trees at a run with scythe-curved swords raised, shaking their spiked spears, some carrying torches. Trollocs as far as he could see to left and right. Not thousands, tens of thousands. Aerith pushed in beside him at the window and gasped.
So many. Are we going to die, Loyal?
She did not sound afraid. She sounded excited.
Not if I can warn Rand and the others.
He was already starting for the door. Only Aes Sedai and Ashaman could save them now.
Here, my boy, I think we may need these.
He turned just in time to catch the long-handled axe that Elder Hammond tossed him. The other man's ears were back all the way, laid flat against his skull. Loyal realized his own were, too.
Here, Aerith,
his mother said calmly, lifting down one of the pruning knives.
If they get inside, we will try to hold them at the stairs.
You are my hero, husband,
Aerith said as she took the knife's shaft in hand.
But if you get yourself killed, I will be very angry with you.
She sounded as if she meant it. And then he and Elder Hammond were running down the corridor together, pounding down the stairs, bellowing at the tops of their lungs a warning and a battle cry that had not been heard in over 2,000 years.
Trollocs coming! Up axes and clear the field! Trollocs coming!
So I will take care of Tyr, Loghain, while you...
Abruptly, Rand wrinkled his nose. It was not that he actually smelled a rotting midden heap suddenly, but he felt as if he did, and the feeling was getting stronger.
"Shadow spawn," Cadswain said quietly, putting down her embroidery and rising.
His skin tingled as she embraced the source. Or maybe it was Olivia, walking briskly toward the windows after the Green Sister. Min stood, drawing a pair of throwing knives from her coat sleeves. At the same instant, through the thick walls, he faintly heard Ogier shouting. There was no mistaking those deep, drum-like voices.
"Trollocs coming! Up axes and clear the field!"
With an oath, he leaped to his feet and ran to a window. Trollocs in thousands came running through the light rain across the newly planted fields. Trollocs as tall as Ogier and taller. Trollocs with ram's horns and goat's horns, wolves' snouts, boar's snouts, trollocs with eagle's beaks and crests of feathers, muddy earth splashing beneath boots and hooves and paws. Silent as death they ran. Black-clad Murdral galloped behind them, cloaks hanging as if they were standing still. He could see 30 or 40, how many more on other sides of the house? Others had heard the Ogier's cries, or maybe just looked out a window. Lightning began to fall among the charging Trollocs, silvery bolts that struck with a roar and hurled huge bodies in every direction. In other places, the ground erupted in flames, fountaining dirt and parts of Trollocs, heads, arms, legs wheeling through the air. Balls of fire struck them and exploded, each killing dozens. But on they ran, as fast as horses, if not faster. Rand could not see the weaves that drew some of those lightning bolts. Now that they were discovered, the Trollocs began to shout, a wordless roar of rage. In the thatch-roofed outbuildings, large, sturdy barns and stables, some of Bashir's Saldaeans stuck their heads out and quickly pulled them back again, drawing the doors shut behind them. "You told your Aes Sedai they could channel to defend themselves?" he said calmly. "Do I look fool enough not to?" Loghain snarled. At another window, he already held Saeedin, nearly as much as Rand could draw. He was weaving as fast as he could. "Do you intend to help or just watch, my Lord Dragon?" There was entirely too much sarcasm in that, but now was not the time to bring it up. Drawing a deep breath, Rand gripped the casement on either side of the window against the dizziness that would come. The dragon's gold-maned heads on the backs of his hands seemed to writhe, and reached out to seize the power. His head spun as Saeedin flooded into him, icy flames and crumbling mountains, a chaos trying to pull him under, but blessedly clean. He still felt the wonder of that. His head spun and his stomach wanted to empty itself, the odd illness that should have gone with the taint, yet that was not why he clung to the casement even harder. The one power filled him, but in that moment of dizziness, Luz Theron had seized it away from him. Numb with horror, he stared at the Trollocs and Murdral racing toward the outbuildings. With the power in him, he could make out the pins fastened to massive mailed shoulders, the silver whirlwind of the Ofrite Band, and the blood-red trident of the Gobal, the forked lightning of the Graimlan and the hooked axe of the Algol, the iron fist of the Daimon and the red blood-stained fist of the Noman. And there were skulls. The horned skull of the Dovol, and the piled human skulls of the Gargael, and the skull cloven by a scythe-curved sword of the Jinnen, and the dagger-pierced skull of the Banshin. Trollocs liked skulls, if they could be said to like anything. It seemed the 12 principal bands might all be involved, and some of the lesser. He saw pins he did not recognize, what seemed a staring eye, a dagger-pierced hand, a man-shape wrapped in flames. They neared the outbuildings where swords were beginning to thrust through the thatch as the Saldaeans tried to cut ways onto the roofs. Thatch was tough. They would need to work desperately hard. Odd the thoughts that came when a madman who wanted to die might well kill you in the next heartbeat. Flows of air pushed the casement in front of him out in a shower of shattered glass and fragmented wood.
"My hands," Luz Theron panted. "Why can't I move my hands? I need to raise my hands."
Earth, air, and fire went into a weave Rand did not know. 6 of them at once. Except that as soon as he saw the spinning, he did know. Blossom of fire. 6 vertical red shafts appeared among the Trollocs, 10 feet tall and thinner than Rand's forearm. The nearest Trollocs would be hearing their shrill whine, but unless memories had been passed down from the War of the Shadow, they would not realize they were hearing death. Luz Theron spun the last thread of air and fire blossomed. With a roar that shook the manor house, each red shaft expanded in a heartbeat to a disk of flame 30 feet across. Horned heads and snouted heads flew into the air, and pinwheeling arms, booted legs, and legs that ended in paws or hooves. Trollocs 100 paces and more away from the explosions went down, and only some got up again. Even as he was spinning those webs, Luz Theron spun 6 others. Spirit touched with fire, the weave for a gateway, but then he added touches of earth, so and so. The familiar silvery blue vertical streaks appeared, spaced out not far from the manor house, ground Rand knew well, rotating into, not openings, but the misty back of a gateway, 4 paces by 4. Rather than remaining open, they rotated shut again, opening and shutting continuously, and rather than remaining fixed, they sped toward the Trollocs.
gateways and yet not. Death gates. As soon as the death gates began to move, Luce Theron knotted the webs, a loose knotting that would hold only for minutes before allowing the whole weave to dissipate, and began spinning again. More death gates, more blossoms of fire, rattling the walls of the house, blowing Trollocs apart, flinging them down. The first of the speeding death gates struck the Trollocs and carved through them. It was not just the slicing edge of the constantly opening and closing gateways. Where a death gate passed, there simply were no Trollocs remaining.
"My hands,"
the madman howled.
"My hands."
Slowly, Rand raised his hands, stuck them through the opening. Immediately, Luce Theron wove fire and earth in intricate combination, and red filaments flashed from Rand's fingertips, 10 from each fanning out. Arrows of fire, this. He knew. As soon as those vanished, more appeared, so fast they seemed to flicker rather than actually go away. Trollocs, struck by the filaments, jerked as flesh and blood, heated in a flash beyond boiling, erupted, jerked and fell, holes blown entirely through their thick bodies. Often two or three behind fell victim as well before a filament died. He spread his fingers and moved his hands slowly from side to side, spreading death across the whole line. Blossoms of fire appeared that were not his weaving, and death gates, slightly smaller than Luce Theron's, and arrows of fire that must have been Loghain's. The other Ashaman were paying attention, but few would be where they could see those last two webs spun. Trollocs fell by the hundreds, the thousands, riven by lightning bolts and balls of fire, blossoms of fire, and death gates and arrows of fire. The earth itself exploding beneath their feet, yet on they raced, roaring and waving their weapons, Murdral riding close behind, black-bladed swords in hand. As they reached the outbuildings, some of the Trollocs surrounded them, pounding on the doors with their fists, prying at the boards of the walls with their swords and spears, tossing flaming torches onto the thatched roofs. Saldaeans up there, working their horse bows as fast as they could, kicked the torches back down, but some hung up on the edges of the roof and flames began catching even on damp thatch. "The fires," Rand thought at Luce Theron. "The Saldaeans will burn. Do something." Luce Theron made no reply, only wove death as fast as he could and hurled it at the Trollocs, death gates and arrows of fire. A Murdral, riddled by half a dozen red filaments, was flung from its saddle, then another. A third lost its head to an arrow of fire in an explosion of boiled blood and flesh, but that one rode on, waving its sword, as if it did not know it was dead. Rand was seeking them out. If the Murdral were all killed, the Trollocs might well turn and run. Death gates and arrows of fire only, Luce Theron spun now. The mass of Trollocs was too close to the manor house for blossoms of fire. Some of the Ashaman apparently did not realize that right away. The room shook to great booms, the whole manor house shook, as if struck by huge sledgehammers, shook as though about to shake apart. And then there were no more explosions, except where a fireball erupted, or the ground itself exploded to throw Trollocs like broken toys. The sky seemed to rain lightning. Silver-blue bolts struck continuously so close to the house that the hair on Rand's arms and chest tried to lift, the hair on his head. Some of the Trollocs succeeded in forcing open the doors to one of the barns and began flooding inside. He shifted his hands, cutting down those still outside with flickering red filaments that blew holes in them. Some had managed to get inside, but those the Saldaeans would have to deal with themselves. On another barn and a stable, flames were beginning to ripple up the thatch, men coughing from the acrid smoke as they shot their bows.
"Listen to me, Luce Theron, the fire. You must do something."
Luce Theron said nothing, just spun his webs to kill Trollocs and Murdral.
"Loghain!" Rand shouted. "The fires! Put them out!"
The other man did not answer either, but Rand saw the weaves that pulled the heat from the flames, killing them. They just vanished, leaving behind cold, blackened thatch where not even tendrils of smoke rose. Death walked among the Trollocs, but they were so close that even the explosions of fireballs rattled the house now. Suddenly there was a Murdral afoot beside the window, pale eyeless face as calm as an Aes Sedai's, black sword already stabbing toward him. Two thrown Aiel spears took it in the chest, and a throwing knife blossomed in its throat, but it only staggered before resuming the thrust. Rand bunched his fingers together, and just before the blade reached him, 100 arrows of fire ripped through the Murdral, flinging it back 20 paces to lie riddled and leaking black blood onto the ground. Myrdrell seldom died right away, but this one never twitched. Hurriedly, Rand searched for more targets, but he realized that Luce Theron had stopped channeling. He could still feel the goosebumps that told him Cadswain and Olivia held the power, still feel Syedine and Loghain, but the other man was weaving no more webs either. Outside, the ground lay carpeted with bodies and parts of bodies from the fields almost to the manor house walls. Within paces of them. A few horses belonging to Myrdrell still stood, one holding up a foreleg as if it were broken. A headless Myrdrell staggered about, flailing wildly with its sword, and here and there a Trolloc jerked or tried to lift itself and failed, but nothing else moved. "It's done," he thought. "It's done, Luce Theron. You can release Syedine now." Harrelin and Anila were standing on the table, veiled and spears in hand. Min stood beside them, her face grim, a throwing knife in either hand. The bond was full of fear, and not for herself, he suspected. They had saved his life, but he had to save it himself now. "A close-run thing," Loghain muttered. "If this had happened before I arrived... a close-run thing." He gave himself a shake and released the source, turning away from his glassless window. "Did you intend keeping these new weaves for your favorites like Taim? Those gateways. Where did we send those Trollocs? I just copied your weave exactly." "It doesn't matter where they went," Rand said absently. His attention was focused on Luce Theron. The madman, the bloody voice in his head, drew a little deeper on the power. "Let go, man. Shadowspawn can't survive passing through a gateway."
"I want to die," Luce Theron said. "I want to join Ilyena."
"If you really wanted to die, why did you kill Trollocs?" Rand thought. "Why kill that Myrdrell? People will find groups of dead Trollocs and maybe Myrdrell without a mark on them," he said aloud.
"I seem to remember dying," Luce Theron murmured. "I remember how I did it."
He drew deeper still, and small pains grew in Rand's temples. "Not too many in any one place, though. The destination shifts every time a death gate opens." Rand rubbed at his temples. That pain was a warning. He was close to the amount of Syedine he could hold without dying or being burnt out. "You can't die yet," he told Luce Theron. "We have to reach Tarmogaidon or the world dies."
"A death gate," Loghain said, his voice tinged with distaste. "Why are you still holding the power?" he asked suddenly. "And so much. If you're trying to show me that you're stronger than I am, I already know it. I saw how large your death gates were compared to mine. And I'd say you're holding every drop of Syedine that you can safely."
That certainly caught everyone's attention. Min tucked her knives away and leapt down from the table, the bond suddenly so full of fear it seemed to throb with it. Harrelin and Anila exchanged worried glances, then went back to staring out the windows. They did not trust Trollocs to be dead until the corpses were 3 days buried. Olivia took a step toward him, frowning, but he shook his head slightly and she turned back to her window, though her frown remained. Cadswain glided down the room, her smooth face sternly composed.
"What does he feel?" she demanded of Min. "Don't toy with me, girl, you know the cost of that. I know that he bonded you, and you know I know. Is he afraid?"
"He's never afraid," Min said. "Except for me, or..." She set her jaw stubbornly and folded her arms beneath her breasts, fixing Cadswain with a glare that dared the Green Sister to do her worst. By the tangled mix of emotions ranging from fear to shame that she tried to keep out of the bond and failed, she had some idea of what Cadswain's worst could be.
"I'm standing under your nose," Rand said. "If you want to know how I feel, ask me."
"Luce Theron," he thought. There was no answer, and the Syedine filling him did not slacken. His temples began to throb.
"Well," Cadswain said impatiently. "I feel right as well, water."
"Luce Theron?"
but I have a rule for you, Cad Swain. Don't threaten Min again. In fact, leave her alone altogether.
Well, well, the boy shows some teeth.
Golden birds and fish, stars and moons, swayed as she shook her head.
Just don't show too many. And you might ask the young woman whether she wants your protection.
Strangely, Min had shifted her frown to him, and the bond was threaded with irritation. Light, it was bad enough that she did not like him worrying about her. Now she seemed to want to take on Cad Swain single-handed, something he would not be eager to do himself.
"We can die at Tommen Garden," Luz Theron said.
And suddenly the power drained out of him.
"He released,"
Loghain said, as if he were suddenly on Cadswain's side.
"I know," she told him.
He whipped his head around in surprise.
"Min can deal with you in your own way if she wishes," Rand said, starting for the door. "But don't threaten her."
"Yes," he thought. "We can die at Tommen Garden."
Chapter 20. The Golden Crane. The wind had died away as the rain diminished, but gray clouds still hid the sun. The fine drizzle was enough to dampen Rand's hair, however, and begin soaking into his gold-embroidered black coat as he walked through the dead Trollocs. Loghain had spun a shield of air so that raindrops bounced from it or apparently slid down nothing to cascade around him. But Rand refused to risk Luz Theron seizing Saidin again. The man had said he could wait until the last battle to die, but how far could you trust a madman on anything?
"Madman?" Luz Theron whispered. "Am I any madder than you?"
He cackled with wild laughter. Now and then, Nandera looked over her shoulder at Rand. A tall, sinewy woman, her graying hair hidden beneath her brown shufa, she led the maidens, those on this side of the dragon wall at least, but she had chosen to lead his bodyguard of maidens personally. Her green eyes, all he could see of her sun-dark face above her black veil, carried little expression, yet he was sure she was worried over him not protecting himself from the rain. Maidens noticed what seemed out of the ordinary. He hoped she would keep quiet.
"You have to trust me," Luz Theron said. "Trust me. Oh, Light, I'm pleading with a voice in my head. I must be mad."
Nandera and the rest of the 50 veiled maidens made a large ring around Rand, almost shoulder to shoulder, prodding their spears into every Trolloc and Murdral they passed, casually stepping over huge severed arms and legs, severed heads, bearing horns or tusks or sharp teeth. Occasionally a Trolloc groaned or feebly tried to crawl away, or to lunge at them, snarling, but not for long. War with Trollocs was like war with rabid dogs. You killed them or they killed you. There was no parley, no surrender, no middle ground. Rain had kept the vultures away so far, yet crows and ravens flapped everywhere, black feathers glistening wetly, and if any were the Dark One's eyes, it did not stop them alighting to pluck out Trolloc's eyes, or see whether they could wrench loose some other gobbet. Enough of the Trollocs had been torn apart that the birds had rich feasting. None went near any dead Murdral, though, and they shunned Trollocs too near a Murdral. That indicated nothing beyond caution. Very likely the Murdral smelled wrong to the birds. A Murdral's blood would etch steel if left on it very long. To ravens and crows, it must have smelled like poison. The surviving Saldaeans shot the birds with arrows or skewered them on their sinuously curved swords or simply bludgeoned them with shovels or hoes or rakes, anything that could make a handy club. In the borderlands, leaving a crow or raven alive was unthinkable. There, they were all too often the Dark One's eyes. Yet there were too many. Hundreds of black-feathered shapes lay crumpled among the Trollocs, and for every corpse there seemed to be hundreds more squabbling loudly over the softer bits, including pieces of their dead fellows. The Ashaman and Aes Sedai had long since given up trying to kill them all.
"I don't like my men tiring themselves this way," Loghain said.
"His men."
"Or the sisters, for that matter.
Gabrella and Tovain will be near exhaustion by nightfall. He had bonded the two Aes Sedai, so he should know. What if there's another attack? All around the manor house and outbuildings, brief fires flared, so hot that people shielded their eyes against them, as Aes Sedai and Ashaman incinerated Trolloc and Murdral dead where they lay. There were too many to afford the labor of gathering them into heaps. With fewer than 20 Aes Sedai, fewer than a dozen Ashaman, and maybe 100,000 Trollocs, it was going to be a long job. Very likely, before it was done, the stench of decay would be added to the already foul odors in the air, the fetid coppery smell of shadowspawn blood, the stink of whatever had been in the Trolloc's intestines when they were ripped open. Best not to think too closely on that. There might not be a farmer or villager left alive between the manor house and the spine of the world. That had to be where the Trollocs had come from, the waygate outside Steading Shangtai. At least Loyal's home itself was safe. Neither Trollocs nor Murdral would enter a steading unless driven, and it required considerable driving. "Would you rather let them rot where they are?" Cadswain inquired, sounding as if she herself had no preference in the matter. She held her green skirts up so the silk did not trail in the blood-soaked mud or the offal that littered the ground, yet she stepped over legs and around heads as casually as did the maidens. She also had woven a parasol against the rain, as had Olivia, although not until she saw the green do so. Rand had tried to make the sisters sworn to him teach the Shaun Chen woman more about the power, but to their minds that had nothing to do with their oaths of fealty. She was safe to herself and seemed safe to others, and they were content to leave matters as they were. Nynaeve had refused, too, because of Min's viewing. Cadswain had coolly informed him that she was not in the business of instructing wilders. "This truly would be a charnel house, then," Min said. Her walk had a fetching sway to it, though she was plainly trying not to think of what lay underfoot, while avoiding planting a heeled blue boot on any of it at the same time, and that made her stumble now and again. She was getting wet, too, her ringlets beginning to cling to her head, though the bond carried no hint of vexation. Only anger, and that seemed directed at Loghain from the sharp stare she was giving him. Where would the servants go, and the people who worked the fields and stables and barns? How would they live? There won't be another attack, Rand said. Not until whoever sent this one learns it failed. And maybe not then. This is all they sent. The Murdral wouldn't have attacked piecemeal. Loghain grunted, but he could not argue with that. Rand looked back toward the manor house. In some places, dead Trollocs lay right at the foundations. None had made it inside, but... Loghain was right, he thought, surveying the carnage. It had been a close-run thing. Minus the Ashaman and the Aes Sedai Loghain had brought, the end might well have been different. A very close-run thing. And if there was another attack later? Plainly someone knew Ishamael's trick, or that blue-eyed man in his head really could locate him. Another attack would be larger, that or come from some unexpected direction. Perhaps he should let Loghain bring a few more Ashaman.
"You should have killed them,"
Luz Theron wept.
"Too late now, too late."
"The source is clean now, fool," Rand thought. "Yes," Luz Theron replied, "but are they?
Am I?"
Rand had wondered that about himself. Half of the double wound in his side had come from Ishamael, the other half from Potin Fain's dagger that carried the taint of Shadar Logoth. They often throbbed, and when they did, they seemed alive. The circle of maidens parted slightly to let through a white-haired serving man with a long, sharp nose who looked even frailer than Ethan. He was trying to shelter beneath a two-tiered seafolk parasol, missing half its fringe, of all things, but the aged blue silk had several ragged holes worn in it, so small rivulets fell on his yellow coat and one on his head. His thinning hair clung to his skull and dripped. He seemed wetter than if he had gone without. Doubtless one of Elgaran's forebears had obtained the thing somehow as a memento, but the obtaining must have been a story in itself. Rand doubted the sea folk gave up a clan wave mistress's parasol lightly.
"My lord dragon,"
the old man said with a bow that spilled more water down his back.
"Baron Sedai instructed me to give this to you straight away."
From beneath his coat he produced a paper, folded and sealed. Rand hastily stuffed it into a pocket of his own coat against the rain. Ink ran easily.
"Thank you, but it could have waited till I returned to the house. Best you get back inside before you're soaked through completely."
"She did say straight away, my lord dragon."
The fellow sounded offended.
"She is Aes Sedai."
At Rand's nod, he bowed again and started slowly back toward the manor house, his back stiff with pride, the parasol showering him with streams of water. She was Aes Sedai. Everyone hopped for Aes Sedai, even in Tyr, where they were not much liked. What did Verin have to say that she needed to put in a letter? Thumbing the seal, Rand walked on. His destination was one of the barns, its thatched roof partially blackened. This was the barn the Trollocs had gotten into. A burly fellow, in a rough brown coat and muddy boots, leaning against a jamb in the open doors, straightened and for some reason hastily looked inside over his shoulder as Rand approached, the maidens spreading out to surround the barn. He stopped dead in the doorway, Min and the others halting beside him. Loghain groaned an oath. A pair of lanterns hanging from uprights that supported the loft gave a dim light, enough to see that every single surface was thick with crawling flies, even the straw-covered dirt floor. As many more buzzed around in the air, it seemed.
"Where did they come from?" Rand asked.
Algarin might not be wealthy, yet his barns and stables were kept as clean as such places could be. The burly man gave a guilty start. He was younger than most of the servants in the house, but his head was bald halfway back, and creases bracketed his wide mouth, fanned out from his eyes.
"Don't know, my lord,"
he muttered, knuckling his forehead with a grimy hand. He focused on Rand so hard that it was plain he did not want to look into the barn.
"I stepped to the door for a breath of fresh, and when I turned around, they was all over everything. I thought maybe these dead flies."
Rand shook his head in disgust. These flies were all too alive. Not every Saldaean defending this barn had died, but all of the Saldaean dead had been gathered here. Saldaeans disliked burials in rain. None of them could say why, but you just did not bury people while it was raining. 19 men lay in a neat row on the floor, as neat as it could be when some were missing limbs or had their heads split open. But they had been laid out carefully by their friends and companions, their faces washed, their eyes closed. They were why he had come here. Not to say goodbye or anything sentimental. He had not known any of these men more than to recognize a face here and there. He had come to remind himself that even what seemed a complete victory had its cost in blood. Still, they deserved better than to be crawling with flies.
"I need no reminders," Luce Theron growled. "I'm not you," Rand thought. "I have to harden myself."
"Loghain, get rid of these bloody things," he said aloud.
"You're harder than I ever was,"
Luce Theron said. Suddenly he giggled.
"If you're not me, then who are you?"
"Now I'm a flaming fly whisk," Loghain muttered. Rand rounded on him angrily, but Olivia spoke in that slurred drawl before he could get a word out.
"Let me try, my lord,"
she asked in a manner of speaking, but like an Aes Sedai, she did not wait for permission. His skin tingled with goosebumps as she embraced Sayadar and channeled. Flies always took shelter from even the lightest rain because one raindrop was enough to put a fly in the ground, easy prey until its wings dried off. Yet suddenly the doorway was billowing with buzzing flies as if the rain were far preferable to the barn. The air seemed solid with them. Rand batted flies away from his face and Min covered her face with her hands, the bond heavy with distaste, but they were interested only in flight. In moments, they were all gone. The balding man, staring at Olivia with his mouth hanging open, suddenly coughed and spat out two flies onto his hand. Cadswain gave him a look that snapped his mouth shut and sent his rough knuckle flying to his forehead. Just a look, yet she was who she was.
"So you watch," she said to Olivia. Her dark eyes were fixed on the Shan Chen woman's face, but Olivia did not start or stammer. She was much less impressed by Aes Sedai than most people. "And remember what I see. I must learn somehow if I am to help the Lord Dragon. I have learned more than you are aware of."
Min made a sound in her throat, very nearly a growl, and the bond swelled with anger, but the yellow-haired woman ignored her.
"You are not angry with me?" she asked Rand, her voice anxious.
"I'm not angry. Learn as much as you can. You're doing very well."
She blushed and dropped her eyes like a girl startled by an unexpected compliment.
Fine lines decorated the corners of her eyes, but sometimes it was hard to remember that she was 100 years older than any living Aes Sedai, rather than half a dozen years younger than himself. He had to find someone to teach her more.
"Randall Thor," Min said angrily, folding her arms beneath her breasts, "you are not going to let that woman—"
"Your viewings are never wrong," he broke in. "What you see always happens. You've tried to change things, and it never worked. You told me so yourself, Min. What makes you think this time can be different?"
"Because it has to be different," she told him fiercely.
She leaned toward him as though ready to launch herself at him.
"Because I want it to be different. Because it will be different. Anyway, I don't know about everything I've seen. People move on. I was wrong about Moraine. I saw all sorts of things in her future, and she's dead. Maybe some of the other things I saw never came true either."
"It must not be different this time," Luce Theron panted. "You promised."
A faint scowl appeared on Loghain's face, and he shook his head slightly. He could not like hearing Min question her ability. Rand almost regretted telling him about her viewing of him, though it had seemed harmless encouragement at the time. The man had actually asked Aes Sedai to confirm Min's ability, though he had been wise enough to try to keep his doubting from Rand.
"I cannot see what makes this young woman so vehement for you, boy," Cadswain mused.
She pursed her lips in thought, then shook her head, ornaments swaying.
"Oh, you're pretty enough, I suppose, but I just cannot see it."
To avoid another argument with Min, she did not call them that, she called them talking, but he knew the difference. Rand took out Varen's letter and broke the blob of yellow sealing wax impressed with the head of a great serpent ring. The brown sister's spidery hand covered most of the page, a few letters blotted where raindrops had soaked the paper. He walked closer to the nearest lantern. It gave off a faint stink of spoiled oil.
"As I said, I have done what I can do here. I believe that I can fulfill my oath to you better elsewhere, so I have taken Tomas and gone to be about it. There are many ways to serve you, after all, and many needs. I am convinced that you can trust Cadswain, and you certainly should heed her advice. But be wary of other sisters, including those who have sworn fealty to you. Such an oath means nothing to a black sister, and even those who walk in the light may interpret it in ways you would disapprove of. You already know that few see that oath as invoking absolute obedience in all things. Some may find other holes. So whether or not you follow Cadswain's advice, and I repeat that you should, follow mine. Be very wary."
It was signed simply, Varen. He grunted sourly. Few thought the oath meant absolute obedience. It was more like none. They obeyed, usually, yet the letter was not always the spirit. Take Varen herself. She warned him against the others doing things he might disapprove of, but she had not said where she was going or what she intended to do there. Was she afraid he might not approve? Maybe it was just Aes Sedai concealment. Sisters kept secrets as naturally as they breathed. When he held out the letter to Cadswain, her left eyebrow twitched slightly. She must have been truly startled to show so much, but she took the letter and held it where the lantern's light illuminated it. "A woman of many masks," she said finally, handing the page back. "But she gives good advice here." What did she mean about masks? He was about to ask her when Loyal and Elder Hammond suddenly appeared in the doorway, each carrying a long-handled axe with an ornately decorated head on his shoulder. The white-haired Ogier's tufted ears were laid back, his face grim, and Loyal's ears were flickering. With excitement, Rand guessed. It could be difficult to tell.
"I trust we are not interrupting,"
Elder Hammond said, his ears rising as he looked sadly at the line of bodies. "You are not," Rand told him, sticking the letter back in his pocket. "I wish I could come to your wedding, Loyal, but..."
"Oh, that's done, Rand," Loyal said.
He must be excited. It was unlike him to interrupt.
"My mother insisted. There won't even be time for much of a wedding feast, maybe none, what with the stump and me having to..."
The older Ogier laid a hand on his arm.
"What?"
Loyal said, looking at him.
"Oh, yes, of course. Well..."
He scrubbed under his broad nose with a finger the size of a fat sausage. Something he was not supposed to be told? Even Ogier had secrets, it seemed. Rand fingered the letter in his pocket. But then so did everyone else.
"I promise you this, Rand,"
Loyal said.
"Whatever happens, I will be there with you at Tarmogoyden. Whatever happens."
"My boy,"
Elder Hammond murmured,
"I don't think you should..."
He trailed off, shaking his head and rumbling under his breath like a distant earthquake. Rand crossed the straw in three strides and offered his right hand. Smiling widely, and with an Ogier that meant very wide, Loyal took it in a hand that enveloped his. This close, Rand had to crane his neck to look up at his friend's face.
"Thank you, Loyal. I can't tell you how much hearing that means to me. But I'll need you before then."
"You need me?"
"Loyal, I've sealed the waygates I know in Camelin and Kyrian, Ilion and Tyr. And I put a very nasty trap on the one that was cut open near Faldara. But I couldn't find the one near Far Matting. Even when I know there's a waygate actually in a city, I can't find it by myself. And then there are all those cities that don't exist anymore. I need you to find the rest for me, Loyal, or Trollocs will be able to flood into every country at once. And no one will know they're coming until they're in the heart of Andor or Kyrian."
Loyal's smile vanished. His ears trembled and his eyebrows drew down till the ends lay on his cheeks.
"I can't, Rand," he said mournfully. "I must leave first thing tomorrow morning, and I don't know when I'll be able to come outside again."
"I know you've been out of the steading a long time, Loyal."
Rand tried to make his voice gentle, but it came out hard. Gentleness seemed a fading memory.
"I'll speak to your mother. I'll convince her to let you leave after you've had a little rest."
"He needs more than a little rest."
Elder Hammond planted the butt of his axe haft on the floor, gripping the axe with both hands, and directed a stern look at Rand. Ogier were peaceful people, yet he looked anything but.
"He has been outside more than 5 years. Far too long. He needs weeks of rest in a steading at the least. Months would be better."
"My mother doesn't make those decisions any more, Rand, though truth to tell, I think she's still surprised to realize it. Aerith does. My wife."
His booming voice put so much pride into that word that he seemed ready to burst with it. His chest certainly swelled, and his smile split his face in two.
"And I haven't even congratulated you," Rand said, clapping him on the shoulder.
His attempt at heartiness sounded false in his own ears, but it was the best he could manage.
"If you need months, then months you shall have. But I still need an Ogier to find those waygates. In the morning I'll take you all to Steading Shangtai myself. Maybe I can convince someone there to do the job."
Elder Hammond shifted his frown to his hands on the axe haft and began muttering again, too softly to make out words, like a bumblebee the size of a huge mastiff buzzing in an immense jar in the next room. He seemed to be arguing with himself.
That might take time, Loyal said doubtfully. You know we don't like to make hasty decisions. I'm not certain they will even let a human into the steading because of the stump. Rand, if I can't come back before the last battle, you will answer my questions about what happened while I was in the steading, won't you? I mean, without making me drag everything out of you.
If I can, I will, Rand told him. If you can, Luce Theron snarled. You agreed we could finally die at Tarmangaiden. You agreed, madman.
He'll answer your questions to your heart's delight, Loyal, Min said firmly, if I have to stand over him the whole while. Anger suffused the bond. She really did seem to know what he was thinking. Elder Hammond cleared his throat.
It seems to me that I myself am more accustomed to outside than almost anyone except the stonemasons. Yes. In fact, I think I am likely to be the best candidate for your task.
Fah, Cadswain said.
It seems you infect even Ogier, boy. Her tone was stern, but her face was all Aes Sedai composure, unreadable, hiding whatever was passing behind those dark eyes. Loyal's ears went rigid with shock, and he almost dropped his axe, fumbling to catch it.
You? But the stump, Elder Hammond, the great stump. I believe I can safely leave that in your hands, my boy. Your words were simple yet eloquent. My advice is don't try for beauty. Keep the simple eloquence and you may surprise quite a few, including your mother.
It seemed impossible that Loyal's ears could grow any stiffer, but they did. His mouth moved, but no words came out. So he was to speak to the stump. What was so secret about that?
My Lord Dragon, Lord Davram has returned.
It was Elsa Penfell who escorted Bashir into the barn. She was a handsome woman, in a dark green riding dress. Her brown eyes seemed to grow feverish when they found Rand. She, at least, was one he did not have to worry about. Elsa was fanatical in her devotion.
Thank you, Elsa, he said. Best you return to help with the cleanup. There's a long way to go yet.
Her mouth tightened slightly, and her gaze took in everyone from Cadswain to the Ogier with an air of jealousy before she offered a curtsy and left. Yes, fanatical was the word. Bashir was a short, slender man in a gold-worked gray coat with the ivory baton of the Marshal General of Saldaea, tipped with a golden wolf's head tucked behind his belt opposite his sword. His baggy trousers were tucked into turned-down boots that had been waxed till they shone despite a light splattering of mud. His recent work had required as much formality and dignity as he could supply, and he could supply a great deal. Even the Shan Chan must have heard his reputation by now. Gray streaked his black hair and the thick mustaches that curled around his mouth like downturned horns. Dark-tilted eyes sad, he walked right past Rand with the rolling gait of a man more accustomed to a saddle than his own feet, walked slowly along the line of dead men, staring intently at each face. Impatient as Rand was, he gave him his time to mourn.
I've never seen anything like what's outside, Bashir said quietly as he walked. A big raid out of the Blight is 1,000 Trollocs. Most are only a few hundred. Ah, Kakun, you never did guard your left the way you should. Even then, you need to outnumber them 3 or 4 times to be assured you won't go into their cookpots. Out there, I think I saw a foreshadowing of Tarmangaiden. A small part of Tarmangaiden. Let's hope it really is the last battle. If we live through that, I don't think we'll ever want to see another. We will, though. There's always another battle. I suppose that will be the case until the whole world turns tinker.
At the end of the row, he stopped in front of a man whose face was split almost down to his luxuriant black beard.
Azkhan here had a bright future ahead of him,
but you could say the same of a lot of dead men. Sighing heavily, he turned to face Rand. The Daughter of the Nine Moons will meet you in 3 days at a manor house in northern Altara, near the border of Andor. He touched the breast of his coat. I have a map. She's already near there somewhere, but they say it isn't in lands they control. When it comes to secrecy, these Seanchan make Aes Sedai look as open as village girls. Cadswain snorted. You suspect a trap? Loghain eased his sword in its scabbard, perhaps unconsciously. Bashir made a dismissive gesture, but he eased his sword too. I always suspect a trap. It isn't that. The High Lady Surath still didn't want me or Manfor to talk to anyone but her. Not anyone. Our servants were mutes, just as when we went to Abu Dhar with Loyal.
Mine had had her tongue cut out,
Loyal said in tones of disgust, his ears tilting back. His knuckles paled on the haft of his axe. Hammond made a shocked sound, his ears going stiff as fence posts.
Altara just crowned a new king, Bashir went on, but everybody in the terrace and palace seemed to be walking on eggshells and looking over their shoulders, Seanchan and Altaran alike. Even Surath looked as though she felt a sword hovering above her neck.
Maybe they're frightened of Tarmon Gaiden, Rand said, or the dragon reborn. I'll have to be careful. Frightened people do stupid things. What are the arrangements, Bashir?
The Saldaean pulled the map from inside his coat and walked back to Rand, unfolding it.
They're very precise. She will bring 6 Suldam and Damani, but no other attendants.
Olivia made a noise like an angry cat, and he blinked before going on, no doubt uncertain of a freed Damani, to say the least.
You can bring 5 people who can channel. She'll assume any man with you can, but you can bring a woman who can't to make the honors even.
Min was suddenly at Rand's side, wrapping her arm around his. No, he said firmly. He was not about to take her into a possible trap.
We'll talk about it, she murmured, the bond filling with stubborn resolve.
The most dire words a woman can say short of I'm going to kill you, Rand thought. Suddenly he felt a chill. Had it been him? Or Luce Theron? The madman chuckled softly in the back of his head. No matter. In 3 days, one difficulty would be resolved. One way or another. What else, Bashir?